Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
Well, gold was doing good early morning trade, but she reversed itself. She or he? It reversed itself. You know how you always put a she to a car or a he
Are you suggesting that the price of gold is being handled by a woman driver? Is that what you're telling me right now, Melody?
Only when it goes up. When it goes down, it's being driven by a man. We have gold today down 170 today. 170 for gold today, 1251. Silver, though, kept 5 cents today, 1840. Platinum was down 3 at 1,028, with palladium down 12 at 773. The USDX today was up a penny, 101.16. Crude oil was down 5.05 at 54 even. Paper markets today, great anticipation for Mr. Trump's speech this evening, down 24 points. 20,812. The NASDAQ was down 36 at 58.25. The S&P was down 6 at 23.63. And we have the 10-year yield, 2.36%, down 0.01. Euros holding at 106. A couple of items came out today. I believe it was the second look at the GDP, the gross domestic product, in the fourth quarter showed a bigger increase in purchases by consumers than initially reported, 3% versus 2.5%. This is what Americans spend has the biggest influence by far on GDP and the official scorecard for the U.S. economy. Yet, the increase in what consumers spent was offset by somewhat smaller gains in business investment, local and state spending, and revised government figures. So as a result, the GDP was unchanged from the original estimate. So they just changed things around. They still kept it at 1.9% for the fourth quarter. And now they get a chance to revise it here shortly. So they can do that too. Consumer confidence unexpectedly increased in February to the highest level since July of 2001 as Americans grow more upbeat about present and future conditions. This is according to the New York-based Conference Board. The confidence index advanced to 114.8. The forecast was for just 111, and it was a revised 111.6 in January. So it seems that everyone is feeling good, and the stock market is at 12,000. The measure of consumer expectations for the next 6 months rose to 102.
12,000?
Pardon?
Stock market's at 12,000?
20,000.
Yeah.
Pay attention.
I am.
The measure of consumer expectations for the next 6 months rose to 102 from 99. Share of those who said more jobs will be available in the coming months rose to 20.4% from 19.7%. The gain in sentiment is the third in the last 4 months, though the real test for the economy is how much follow-through there will be in terms of actual spending. Plus, Al, speaking of the Dow 20,000, you can thank the little guy. Now, this is a for sure sign that people should be getting out of the stock market, because the little guy is always the last guy that goes into when everything is at the top and he loses his shirt. Mm-hmm. So you can thank the little guy for Dow 20,000. That's the takeaway from data tracking money flows into and out of stocks, and this is according to J.P. Morgan Chase and Company. The telltale sign, retail investors are behind the longest string of U.S. stock highs in decades. An $83 billion surge of cash into passive strategies so far this year, amid a $15 billion withdrawal from actively managed funds. That's on top of evidence that institutional traders have backed away. investors or normal
institutional traders are backing away at the same time the little guys are coming in.
Yeah, that's what I said, guys.
You know what they're doing? I get what you're saying, but they are buying high and they're going to sell low.
Well, that's what I said. Investors, exactly. Investors are normalizing their equity fund buying, and this is a return to normal. Global market strategist at the U.S. Bank had said in a phone interview. So, yeah, and that's always the last sign. It's always the last phase of a bull market. You got the little guy coming in. You know, he stayed out.
The
for
smart
so
guys
long.
Are getting out.
Smart guys are getting out.
And the only way they could get out is by selling
from
to
the
little
guys going in.
They have to sell to the idiots.
And when he go in, he won't have any
like
buyers.
Dr. Doolittle, if I could sell to the idiots.
So again, another sign, folks. Another sign, and it's sad because that's just the way it works. It's all about human nature. You know, the little guy sits on the sideline. That's what they do with gold, too. You sit on the sideline thinking, oh, well, it's going to go back down, or you'll listen to somebody like Harry Dent. Oh, it's going to 700. Oh, I'm going to wait till it gets to 700 so I can buy a lot more with my money. And you wait and you wait, and the prices just rise, and they rise a little more, and they rise a little more. Then finally you're there, well, I'm not going to get in, and it's too high. And then it gets to 2,000 or 2,100, and you'll be running in there and buying at a much higher price. Don't let that happen to you, folks. Another sign, cars. You know, we talked about, you know, the amount of vehicles that people are buying, that they're having record years. Well, for the first time in this guy's 37 years working at a New Jersey car dealership, Larry Cull had to rent extra space to store unsold new Honda vehicles. So he had to rent extra space so he could store vehicles that aren't being sold. Well, this is one of the latest signs that the record U.S. automaker is market is cooling. Across dealer lots in America, inventory is piling up as automakers produce more cars than are being bought. Dealers had about 85 days worth of cars and trucks on hand at the beginning of February, about 22 days more than at the beginning of 2017, and 8 days more than a year earlier. Sales are good. People are choosing SUVs over vehicles. And he says he just has more product on the ground than he's ever had before. And you're going to start seeing production cutbacks. And some have already begun. GM, Fiat, Chrysler, they have eliminated shifts, laid off employees, or scheduled days off early this year at plants making slower selling models, including the Chevrolet Cruze compacts, the Chrysler Pacifica minivans, and the Buick LaCrosse sedans. You don't hear any of that being talked about on the news, do you? About jobs being laid off at the auto manufacturers? No, you don't hear anything about that. So while heavy inventory is a signal of potential pressure on automakers' profits, it also boosts costs for dealers, which pay interest on inventory as well as any extra expense to store the vehicles. Another sales manager at a Lexus dealership said that he's selling about 40 or 50 fewer vehicles than usual this month. He sees the gap in popularity between SUVs and sedans. And you have to remember, too, during 2008, remember you had a lot of these dealerships consolidate because, you know, the GM, the Ford, and so forth, they forced these dealers to go. A lot of them went out of business because there was really too many of them. And so now you're having even a little bit more difficult with these dealerships. Bigger dealerships, and but they still also have their troubles. So
I think their troubles are partially a consequence of they've had basically no down payments to buy cars. They've had real easy financing on cars for the last 18, 24 months.
Sure,
and what they've done is they've brought a bunch of people in to buy cars who might otherwise have waited another year or two, and they essentially, by selling a bunch of cars at low financing rates over the last 18, 24 months, they have diminished the demand today. People would otherwise be buying today. They already got one. And they're going to hang on to it for several years. And You know, and the point behind this is you can manipulate the system, but it's like squeezing a balloon. If you squeeze it over here at this end of the balloon, it's going to bulge at the other end of the balloon. I mean, there's no free lunch. They can manipulate things to a certain extent to get an immediate short-term result. They can do that. But then there's going to be a consequence. And all of a sudden, where's your jobs? Where's your jobs? Where's your sales? How do you pay your debts? Blah, blah, blah. And I don't know what the solution is on this exactly, because I don't believe you'll ever persuade people not to manipulate if they have the opportunity to do so and profit from the manipulation. The bet is always that, you know, if I can make a fast buck now, you just keep on making more money, and when the trouble, if there's any trouble a year or two from now, I'll figure out another way to make a fast buck.
Well, it's not only making a fast buck, and maybe you're meaning the same thing, but there's no buyers. They have to create these incentives. People don't have the money, so they create these incentives. Last month, I was reading on a Chevy truck, on one of the Silverados, they were giving discounts up to or over $5,000, plus the low interest rates and everything else. So they create 0% financing. You know, they get these people in. And again, we talked about subprime loans and leasing. There's been a lot of leasing going on. People always want a new car. You know, they want to buy things they can't have, that they can't afford. So they go into leasing. They go into these 0% financing. They go and, you know, if you give them a little incentive, they'll be out there to buy. So, you know, the American consumer, you know, that's why 70% of our economy is consumer purchasing. So, you know, they're out there to buy. So
Which is to say debtor purchasing in most instances.
Of course.
And that's a dangerous thing. It's not purchasing by producers. People have already produced a certain amount of wealth. They've saved it, and now they're going to buy something. It's produced by people who don't really have the money to pay for it right now. They want it right now, and they go into debt. They promise to pay. Pay you tomorrow or a week from now or a month from now or over the course of the next 5 years or 30 years. Well, as that piles up, that debt keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and sooner or later something's going to happen where the debt is not going to be paid. When it does, trouble, trouble, trouble.
Well, if you can't pay your debts and you end up homeless, you need to move to Hawaii. I couldn't believe this when I was reading this. Doctors could prescribe houses to the homeless under a radical Hawaii bill. So there was this guy. He was homeless. He was asked. He was sick. Went to the hospital. Took him to the hospital. He had a temperature over 104. He was in the hospital for 7 days, hooked to an IV, treatment that could cost $40,000, according to the hospital that had admitted him. But he didn't have to pay. The bill was covered by government dollars in the form of Medicaid. Over the past 4 years, this guy has been to the hospital for infections 21 times.
Infections?
From his health, living on the street. He has psoriasis that flares up in a humid climate and unsanitary conditions. He's always in the hospital with infections. So there's a new proposal in Hawaii. Instead of prescribing medication to homeless patients like this guy, doctors could prescribe something else that might eliminate their health problems. And the prescription is housing. There was a bill that was introduced by a state senator, Josh Green, to classify homelessness as a medical condition. Green, who is also a physician, said that the idea originated in his own work in the emergency room where he saw many homeless patients. They arrive for a treatment of basic conditions at great expense. He says, I'm really just applying a Band-Aid, but these problems require intensive long-term support. So there is this bill that, according to Green, a recent internal study by a major Hawaiian insurer found that over half of the state's $2 billion Medicaid allotment was consumed by a tiny fraction of users, many whom are dealing with homelessness, mental illness, and substance addiction.
So, well, if homelessness is a disease and it can be cured with a prescription, what about carlessness? Huh? If I don't have a car, can I get a doctor to recommend to give me a prescription? Just go down to the Chevy dealer and say, here's my prescription. Fill it, and then the government will pay for my car.
Doctors,
homelessness, carlessness. How about I don't have enough money in my wallet? That's probably another. Can I go hold up a bank if I get a prescription?
As envisioned by Green, doctors could prescribe housing on a case-by-case basis. In order to qualify, the patient must have been homeless for at least 6 months and suffer from mental illness or substance addiction. Last year, treatment for homeless people at the hospital cost $90 million when emergency medical services are being heavily overused by a population that's being poorly served. It costs everybody. So, yeah. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me?
I doubt that this is, there's a point behind what he's arguing, but it certainly is. I mean, I don't know. It's certainly strange.
We also know that I think as far as welfare and payments, Hawaii, you can have a really nice living in Hawaii. I think they have the state, I think they have the, of course, they have the a very high, you know, cost, you know, to live there also. But so anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Well, it is interesting.
It's actually a bill.
No, I get that. I get that. But, you know, it's one of the things if you're going to get it, if where does it end? I don't doubt that on one level it makes sense. People will be healthier if they have a home than if they're on the street. I don't doubt that it makes a lot of sense, but where does it end? We're going to get housing for people. We're going to get cars for people. We're going to, you don't have enough money, we're going to give you a prescription. You need more. Get a prescription from the doctor. Go hold up a bank. That's okay. You needed it because it was a prescription. I'm being facetious to some degree, but we are still talking about a very big change in how wealth is distributed. You don't have to earn it. You just need a doctor to prescribe it.
The problem with this, but I don't understand, why should it cost $40,000 to be in a hospital for an IV?
Well, that's another story.
I mean, and that's a big problem, because that's what they're relating this bill to, is the expense of taking care of these people and their trips to the hospital, what it's costing the hospital and the shareholders.
Well, what we're going to see here is, no matter how you figure it, we can't afford it. All right? Either the doctors have to cut their income dramatically, the hospital has to cut their charges, we have to get rid of some of the people who need the service, we have to raise taxes on people who don't need it but have money. The whole thing is politically untenable. Might be a good idea, but how are they going to make it happen? We're going to take a break, couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I only wanted to talk about one more thing, and we talked about it prior to the program about Amazon, and I always thought that, you know, maybe what would bring the system down would be, you know, Chinese dumping our dollars, the rest of the world following suit, or World War III or something like that. But and we often talk about computers and robots on this program, and Amazon's web hosting services are among the most widely used out there, and they've gone down. And it happens a lot. It's happening today in most of on the East Coast, and you have a lot of websites, business websites, that have gone down. And I told Alice, this is one area that's not regulated. It's like a web. You have all these little things are all connected and interconnected, and, you know, just like a crazy highway of roads not leading to anywhere or interconnecting, and you have one of those systems go down permanently, and we've got some real problems because no one knows, or at least we think no one knows, exactly who is doing what, how it's doing, and but their whole Amazon's web hosting services. Now, I think their shopping network is separated from this. They're reporting high error rates in one region of their web services, and a lot of their services are going offline. And I think everyone has heard of Alexa. You see it advertised everywhere. Yeah. And everybody's talking about Alexa. Well, they're struggling. I don't know. Him, her, they're struggling to stay online. So there's it's a pretty big deal. It's a pretty big outage. It includes Instagram is one of the websites, Vine, IMDb. They have all kinds of silly little names. I'm not going to go through them here on the program. But it's just, it's so huge. And I've seen pictures of these warehouses that have all these just row after row after row after row of servers. I'm thinking, you know, it's just what if an earthquake at that particular spot, you know, would go down? And I don't know.
Well, they're redundant to some degree, and they probably are prepared to have servers that are not in that space who might be able to fill in the gap if things got
perhaps
that one spot. I don't know what they've got, but no one really knows, because this is a technology that is evolving as we speak. It's like the Wild West. People are making money any way they can. They are taking chances. They're saying, ha, I have a brilliant new idea and we can do this, and if they can sell it, somebody's going to install it. Now, maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. All right. Got an article here from the Hacker News. A typo in Zerocoin source code helped hackers steal Z coins worth $585,000. Article says, are you a programmer? If yes, then you would know the actual pain of forgetting a semicolon. The hide-and-seek champion since 1958. Somebody forgot a semicolon and big trouble happened. A lousy semicolon. Typos annoy everyone. Remember how a hacker's typo stopped the biggest bank heist in history, saved $1 billion of Bangladesh Bank from getting stolen? But this time, a typo in the Zerocoin source code costs the company more than $585,000 in losses. Zerocoin cryptocurrency protocol is designed to add true cryptographic anonymity to Zerocoin transactions, take full advantage of the zero knowledge proofs to ensure complete financial privacy of users. Well, that's the idea, right? But apparently somebody saw through it. announced on Friday that a typographical error on a single additional character in Zero Coin source code helped an attacker to steal 370,000 Zero Coin, which is over $585,000 at today's price. And the point behind this is this whole thing is fragile, right? And it gets bigger and bigger. Somebody walked off with $585,000 based on somebody forgot to add a comma or some such. One character, one additional character in source code, and somebody was able to steal $585,000. It gives you a clue to how vulnerable all of this is, and it illustrates something I've argued for years. When we talk about becoming more efficient, we also become more vulnerable. All right? There was a time in General Motors back in the 50s when General Motors had acres and acres of engine blocks and hoods and whatever else and the parts they needed out in the back 40 acres behind the plant. And if the union wanted to go out on strike, fine. They didn't care if they went out on strike. I mean, they weren't in favor of it. Management had acres and acres of parts, and they could keep building automobiles for a long time. Then we set up and just-in-time delivery service, which was bringing in new engines, motor blocks, whatever were being brought in just minutes before they actually needed them. There'd be another shipment. They're just about out, another shipment would pull in and they start offloading. And the net result is improvement, less capital and less capital tied up and engine blocks laying out in the back lot and the back 40 and whatever, but also more vulnerability, which showed up when one little outfit that manufactured brakes for General Motors automobiles, they went out on strike. It was about 40 guys who worked in this little factory and they made brake shoes. And they were the only brake shoes that General Motors used for all their products. And this little outfit went out on strike. It shut General Motors down for 4 or 6 months. I don't know how long. I don't remember. It's this 20-year-old story. But the point is our increasing efficiency is taken from our margin for error. As we become more efficient, we have less and less margin for error. And there's going to be errors, and when they do, they're going to be costly. We have a narrow, $585,000 is one example of what can happen. You get super efficient, you also get super vulnerable because there's no margin for error.
I got an update on the Amazons about their giant servers that crashed today. There's actually millions of companies that use the cloud service. Uh-huh. It affected everything from larger websites to people's smartphones, even library catalogs. Some of those that were affected included the Harvard Business Review. They went offline. Yahoo was experiencing some problems. Some other affected sites was Adobe, Pinterest, Expedia, and the SEC. And so it also has the outage has also affected parts of the News Corp Australia's sites. Netflix also uses Amazon servers, reported problems this morning with its email system. Apple's cloud services also suffered performance this morning, believed to be linked to the Amazon outage. So those are some pretty big and powerful and lots of money involved that were affected today. And I guess some are still are. I don't think the problem has been fixed. So, yeah, I'm thinking the SEC with Amazon. I mean, it's just so – it's so one, Al. So when something goes, it's all going to go.
Yeah, and as it becomes increasingly intertwined, all right, something one goes down in one place, all of a sudden the whole country could go down.
Absolutely.
Now, I don't believe we're at that point right now, but I believe we're coming to that point. We will inevitably have one network tie into other networks. We have five networks. They become three, two networks, finally one network. Then everybody's vulnerable. And then the government wants to regulate everything, and the government has no clue to what's going on here. And in part because it's innovative. The technology is evolving again as we speak. There are innovations that are taking place every minute practically. How do you regulate that? The only way you can regulate it is you have to stop the innovations. If you stop the innovations, then what? we become less efficient and less efficient as other countries, as they are able to employ innovation and we have regulated innovation to a stop, then we become less competitive. This is a problem where you look at it, you begin to understand it, and say, this is not going to end well. Because they're going to keep shaving away at our margin for error. They're going to keep cutting back on it as we become more and more efficient until we can't withstand a tiny error. Again, one comma or one letter, one typographical letter, character, contributed to the theft of $585,000. This is actually a small example, but it illustrates a point. You know, we're getting more and more vulnerable. What are you going to do about this? You have to look at this, in my opinion, and you're going to say, this is not as reliable a system as a lot of people would have you believe.
Well, the problem, Al, is no one ever talks about this. No, and I think in the back of everyone's mind, everyone agrees that, you know, it's a very, you know, it's an area that's just waiting to have major problems.
But I don't think most people do agree. I think they are so beguiled by their smartphone that they imagine it's going to last forever.
We're distracted. There's so many things going on anymore. There's so many distractions and deceptions that are happening all at once. I don't think people can keep up. So, you know, whether your cell phone works today or not, that's the least of our problems. So we don't think of it as being, it's just my cell phone, it's not that big of a deal. But it is a big deal, because if that isn't working, there isn't anything else that's working either on a large scale. I'm talking about
the Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. All right? They are planning to install microcomputers in your oven, in your refrigerator, in the television, the VCR, whatever it is you've got. There's going to be a microcomputer in there that can sense what's happening, how soon you need a new one, and is communicating this information back to somebody who is ultimately accountable to the government. They're going to be spying on you from every electrical device, including your electric toothbrush, probably.
And where do you think? Yeah, exactly. Where do you think is healthcare?
This is a network that can go. Hackers are already using this Internet of Things, which is just in its infancy. They're using this for denial of services. They're using these little microcomputers. They've harnessed them, and they've used them to raid other computers, and the whole thing becomes bizarre. But what I'm trying to get to, this Internet of Things, you will live in a world. You will live in the cloud. That's where we'll live. The cloud will consist of the computers and the monitors and the toothbrushes, the electric toothbrushes, and your stove and your everything electrical. It will be wired where somebody's going to be monitoring, and they'll be able to tell how much time you spend on the computer or how much time you spend on the toothbrush. They'll know who you are. They will be able to put profiles together. But once that thing goes down, once the whole country is wired with that thing, with that Internet of Things, if something happens to that system, guess what? There's going to be a terrible nationwide, maybe global problem.
And where do you think our health care is going to go?
Oh, I understand.
How do you think they're going to stop the rising costs of health care? I don't know if I mentioned on the program or if you and I spoke about it, Al, but I read an article about what they're doing to cows, an experiment with cows. They implant these chips in these cows, and it monitors everything in their system.
Yep.
They can adjust from their feed to their antibiotics or whatever, in order for these cows to produce higher quality and more milk. So their health is, you know, supreme. That is not that far away from implanting a chip in a person to monitor our health. And what are we doing in order to
improve? But hopefully,
you know,
not for the same reason. But kind of is. Why do they want to monitor our health?
Absolutely.
It's not to keep us healthy. It's to keep us productive. It's to keep all of the little squirrels in the squirrel cage spinning that wheel at maximum velocity. And if you're not pushing hard enough on the squirrel cage, maybe you need a tune-up, or maybe you need to be phased out. All right? Just like cows. You don't produce enough milk, goodbye. Going to the bologna factory.
These are things that we read about in books, in tales, and in science fiction
books,
you know, when we were kids. And it's real.
Yeah,
it's here today, and it's real. And it's not that far away, and it's not far-fetched whatsoever. And it's creepy. And so the scary part about it, Al, is you have this younger generation that will embrace all of this.
Well, you can't blame them. They are born into
the
world they're born
they
into, and
in.
They take it for granted that, you know, whatever they come into, that's got to be okay.
The elite and the powerful, they're very patient. They know what they can do with each generation. And so, you know, I think now their focus, it's not us older people anymore. It's not the older generation. They're not worried about us anymore. You know, they have us tied to our retirement plans and, you know, making sure that we make it to, you know, however old we live and so forth. The elite, they're focused now on the young generation.
Yeah,
and they want to make sure that they affect them and control them to the best of, to their abilities. But
It's unnerving. It's unnerving.
It is.
And it's not a situation where we're talking about what's going to happen in 10 years or 20 years. We're talking about something that could be happening in 10 weeks or 20 weeks. It's coming at us faster and faster and faster. And it's coming faster than we are able to, the vast majority of us. I don't think anyone can really absorb what's going on right now. I don't think anyone is truly smart enough. I know that some people get it a lot better than I do, a lot better than Melody does. I know there are people, but nobody's got the whole thing. I don't think it can be understood in its entirety at this point in time.
Oh, I understand it, Al. I mean,
you
it's
understand,
not that. It's,
huh?
I mean, you get the. You can see it overall. I certainly don't know the details of how a computer runs, and you know, I'm still amazed at fax machines. You know, I'm still amazed that you turn on the TV or the
radio. I'm amazed anybody even uses fax
machines
anymore. That's what amazes me. Why would anyone use a fax machine?
Oh, I still do. You still use
it. Strikes me as bizarre.
No, it isn't bizarre. We still use it in business.
Do they have a buggy whip attached to your fax machine?
No.
Doesn't come no buggy
faxes
with
are,
the
faxes
machine.
Are still very important in business, Al. So, but the point is, you know, you can see the direction, but so many people are so misguided and so distracted. We have so many distractions in today's world.
Well, we have a couple more distractions
yes, we
coming
do. We
up
have a commercial.
Just a moment now. They're called commercials, and we're going to have to distract the listeners with a couple of commercials, and Melody and I will be right back as soon as the distractions are over. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
I thought you had something that you had wanted to discuss.
No, I have nothing I want to say. It's another one of those days, Melody, when, you know.
I don't think the listeners would buy into you don't want to talk.
Well,
they know how
there's some information that's worth communicating. Well, I don't like to talk. I like to communicate if at all possible. I mean, there's a difference. I like to think there's a difference, but, you know. There's something from Zero Hedge, and they interviewed Jim Rogers. And Jim Rogers, the headline here is, we're about to have the worst economic problems of a lifetime. A lot of people will disappear. All right, billionaire's commodity guru Jim Rogers was recently interviewed on a number of subjects, again, and was reported at Zero Hedge. And one of the subjects were, are the Russians the bad guys? And Mr. Rogers, he writes back, he says, Mr. Obama's administration tried to pull an illegal coup in Ukraine. We got caught at it. There are several pieces of evidence where we know that the State Department under President Obama tried to instigate an illegal coup in the Ukraine. The Russians outsmarted us, and so the State Department started blaming it on the Russians. And the hype against Russians has gotten bigger and bigger ever since. Again, we tried to instigate that illegal coup in Crimea and Ukraine. So now the Democrats, especially since they lost the election, are trying to blame it on the Russians. It's unfathomable to me how the Russians could have determined the outcome of the elections. He had more to say on the subject, but I agree with him. I think it is interesting. We're blaming the Russians. They have become our boogeymen. The truth of the matter is our boogeymen are a lot closer to home than Moscow. All right? It's very convenient to blame somebody on the other side of the world for any problems we may have. But the truth of the matter is the reason we have those problems primarily is because we have a government that is irrational, out of control, and willing to take extraordinary risks to extend its power or demonstrate its power. I don't even know why they act the way they do, but they're certainly not interested in protecting the American people. If they were, we wouldn't have Donald Trump in the White House. He would never have been elected. We have had a couple of generations of American politicians that refused to protect our borders from invasion by illegal aliens. If we had done that, if they were packing rifles, it would be absolutely treason. It's probably treason anyway, but the government is, well, we can go invade Iraq. We can cause economic havoc for Iran. We can send troops for a decade or more into Afghanistan. We can do that, but we can't protect our own borders. There's only one explanation for that, and that is our own government is bent on destroying this nation. And they are, but insofar as they are, all right, insofar as that is part of their agenda. And when I said destroying this nation, I mean they want to incorporate it into one world government, the New World Order. There's no proviso in the Constitution for that to take place. We cannot incorporate the United States of America into the New World Order without effectively destroying the United States of America. Isn't going to happen. And the people in Washington, they know this. They don't want to talk about it, but they understand that. And they say, well, but we've got to have this new world order. We've got to have global government. And so we have to destroy the United States. One of the ways you destroy it, let the illegal aliens pour in. Don't stop them. Allow them. Encourage them to pour into this country. And we can change the nation, change the culture, divide it up, break it down. This to me is just part and parcel of the same thing that Jim Rogers is talking about when he says we are using the Russians as a scapegoat for our own mistakes, our own problems. He spoke on the Greater Depression. He said, get prepared, because we're going to have the worst economic problems we've had in your lifetime or my lifetime. And when that happens, a lot of people are going to disappear. Now, he's not talking about, I don't believe he's talking about people being hauled off to concentration camps per se, but he says in 2008, Bear Stearns disappeared. Bear Stearns had been around over 90 years. Lehman Brothers disappeared. Lehman Brothers had been around 150 years. So the next time around, meaning the Greater Depression, it's going to be worse than anything we've seen, and a lot of institutions, people, companies, even countries, certainly governments, and maybe even countries are going to disappear. I hope you get very worried. He wants people worried. You understand? He wants you worried. He says, and I'm sure the reason he's doing that is he wants people to get prepared. There's big trouble coming, and you need to get prepared. All right, he goes on. He says, the dollar is going to go too high, may turn into a bubble, at which point I hope I'm smart enough to sell it, because at some point the market forces are going to cause the dollar to come back down, because people are going to realize, oh my gosh, this is causing a lot of turmoil, economic problems in the world, and it's damaging the American economy. At that point, the smart guys will get out. I hope I'm one of them, and that's Jim Rogers talking, and he's right. He's investing in those dollars for the moment, right? I'm inclined to say, look, Rogers is hoping. He's investing in dollars now. But he says, I hope I'm one of them, meaning one of the smart guys who knows when to get out, when the getting is good. How high, how far do you ride this thing? I'm looking at it from the perspective, look, I don't care what the dollar does right now. I know the dollar is a dead dollar walking. It's just a question of time before it completely collapses. And I don't imagine that I have enough brains or good luck or perhaps even blessing where I can invest in dollars and know exactly when you hit that, you sell high, you buy low, you sell high, know exactly when that highest mark is, and then you get out. Because if you miss it, you're going to take a terrible beating. I'm sitting back and say, no, I would rather, I know gold is going to prevail. It might not prevail this week or next month, but it's going to prevail. So I'm going to play, from my perspective, gold is not a risky investment. Gold is a sure thing, although not necessarily in the short term.
We have a caller, Al.
Okay, and who is that?
We have, well, tomato, tomato, Ivan. We have Ivan calling.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello,
hi,
Ivan.
Yeah, how are you doing? Long time no talk.
It's been a while.
Yes, a little while. Last week I listened to a good interview between Greg Hunter
Stockman
and Robert David Steele. I don't know if you are familiar with the guy.
No, I'm not. I know that Greg interviewed David Stockman this last week, and he had a good interview out of it. And
I seen that. That was pretty good. But Robert Steele is ex-Marine and also ex-CIA agent. And they had a good discussion about Trump and what he foresees, in the upcoming
event. What's the thumbnail sketch of what he anticipates?
Well, in essence, he said that as soon as the spring breaks, you know, the weather gets better.
Yep.
They expect a lot of riots starting, which are being sponsored by Soros and. Beyond that, Rothschild or a deep government.
I understand. Deep state.
Deep state, yeah. And he said that by around May 1, which is May Day, which is normally a communist. It used to be a normal. In Europe, it used to be a good normal holiday, but the communists took it over, and they expect up to 3 million people in Washington to oust Trump.
Oust?
So, to oust him out, yes. That isn't going to happen.
I mean, I don't know who expects that, but that's not going to happen. It better be 3 million people with tanks and bombers and whatever. I mean, you're not going to knock Trump out just because 3 million people show up. I find that hard to believe.
Plus, they wouldn't be announcing it either. You know, they wouldn't be talking about it.
What happened in Russia? I mean, you had the Tsar army with, you know, pretty tough, what do you call those? They rode on the horses. They were the cavalry of the Russia.
Cavalry? I know who you're talking about. You're talking, I can't think of the name either.
I tell you, my mind.
Cossacks. Cossacks.
Cossacks, yeah. Cossacks.
Yeah.
And they overthrew Russia.
I understand that, but that was then, this is now.
And this happened in 100 years ago, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I find it hard to believe that they're going to get 3 million people show up in Washington, point one.
Well, I mean...
That's going to be hard. That's going to be a very difficult number to reach. They might be able to get a couple hundred thousand. I'm going to be very surprised if they can get 3 million. And even if they do, what are they going to do?
I'm just saying, you said in a nutshell, I gave you the nutshell version.
Okay.
And because there are a lot of leaks coming out of the government, okay, so they have Trump pretty well isolated. All the, you know, some of these, like Priebus and some of the other people. Like Flynn, who was ousted, and it wasn't the reason that he talked to the Russians or whatever. There were some other reasons, which he got into details. But so I'm just, I just thought, I don't know if you heard anything about it or if.
It's one of those things. I mean, if someone's going to overthrow the government, I don't believe they're going to advertise. 3 million people are going to show up on May 1st, and they're going to storm the White House and make revolution. That's a fairly secure facility, and if they know 3 million, I guarantee you they will. You can say there's 3 million, or somebody can say there's 3 million coming. The government, they won't know. The people that make those claims, they won't know for sure if they're going to get 100,000, 10,000, or 3 million. They don't know. The government will know. The government will know how many people are actually planning to come to Washington on May 1st, and they will be ready. It would be my belief. We can't allow 3 million people to come up and overthrow the government. That is simply intolerable, because once we say that's okay and we let them, I don't care if you're a communist or socialist or what you are, once you let these kinds of events take place and they're sanctioned by the political system, you can bet Trump would just be the first. The next time we're unhappy with somebody, show up with 3 million, 5 million, 10 million. We can throw them in and out anytime we want them. It strikes me as an improbable. Nothing's impossible in this world, but that's extremely improbable to me.
All right. Well, I just thought, because I listened. Couple of other programs and videos, and they had similar.
I understand that, but you know, there's something about the news where you got to have something to say, and the more outrageous it is, the more people you can get to listen. It comes and it goes. It's like leaves in the breeze, and sometimes they're meaningful, and sometimes they are misunderstood or exaggerated and whatever. I think, you know, I don't put much credence in that particular report. There's others that may be valid, but that one doesn't ring my bell. We got about a minute and a half here.
Okay. Well, the only other thing is that there are a lot of 100-year anniversaries, like the appearance of Virgin Mary in Fatima was in May of 1917. The Russian Revolution started early in 1917, and it finally finished in October of 1917.
Actually, it kind of finished around 1990 when the Soviet Union collapsed. I'd say that was when it finished, but
The Soviet Union.
I know. The original revolution.
Yeah, the Bolsheviks and then the communists, okay? Yeah. Initially, the Bolsheviks took over. First the Mensheviks, then the Bolsheviks, and then finally the communists took over. So.
And ultimately, maybe anyway. The bankers. All right, Yvonne, well, we appreciate your phone call. Thank you for listening, and we appreciate your phone call, but we're going to have to bid
I'll
you
leave it
adieu.
At
all right.
Hello.
Thank you, Ivan.
Yeah, you're welcome, Melody. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
All right, we have about 45 seconds left. Melody, anything you'd like to add?
No, we'll probably talk about Stockman later on in this week. But, you know, he talks about March, and I've been saying March for a year and a half, that that's when we were going to see, you know, things become a little bit deeper. And a lot of it all depends on the budget and the debt ceiling. They could still extend the debt ceiling like they did the last time, but at least there's a discussion and so forth. And I think this time, it might be a little bit of a rude awakening, or at least another push into the direction of, hey, we have too much debt and none of these programs can get paid for.
Okay, folks, we're running out of gas, running out of dollars, and running out of time.
But
we're
going to
take a break
goals.
Until tomorrow. We'll be back in the meantime. With the good Lord bless you and me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my